It's nearly noon, and time for the KMXT Midday News. Currently 53 degrees and a beautiful day out there. If you have a chance to get outside, certainly might want to do so. Mostly sunny skies, looking for mostly sunny skies tomorrow as well. Partly cloudy skies Tuesday night and tonight. Chance of rain on Wednesday. Coming up on your midday news, Alaska's COVID-19 situation is worsening. And we have a new update on the number of COVID-19 cases in the Kodiak Island borough. Also an update on the outbreak at the Coast Guard station in Kodiak. Looking into problems the borough has had getting ballots out to the more remote locations. All that and more after the NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Uncharted territory. That's how President Trump's physician, Dr. Sean Conley, is describing Trump's impending release from Walter Reed in a few hours, days after he was admitted to the medical center for COVID-19.
Over the past 24 hours, the president has continued to improve. He's met or exceeded all standard hospital discharge criteria. He'll receive another dose of remdesivir here today, and then we plan to get him home.
Conley says there's no evidence of live virus that Trump could spread to others, but he acknowledges the risks for Trump and those around him still exist. Medical experts have repeatedly said there's a lot the scientific community does not know about this contagion that has killed more than 209,000 people in the U.S. and infected millions, some of whom are still struggling to fully recover. Well, Trump's doctor declined to disclose the condition of Trump's lungs at the press conference a short time ago. But with re-election likely on his mind, Trump took to Twitter to tell followers not to let COVID-19 dominate their lives. Here's NPR's Juana Summers.
President Trump says that he is feeling really good and will continue his recovery at the White House. He claims to feel better than he did two decades ago and encourages people not to fear the coronavirus. Now, Trump's announcement that he will leave the hospital comes as more key members of his staff have tested positive for the coronavirus. That includes White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany.
That's NPR's Juana Summers reporting. Well, Dr. Anthony Fauci, a member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, says he still has not been informed about the specifics of contact tracing by the White House.
I don't know what the process of the contact tracing is that's going on at the White House. In general, the CDC is very much involved with the local authorities, so I don't think it would be appropriate for me to comment about the contact tracing that's gone on around the White House because I'm not informed on it.
Fauci speaking to CNN. Pennsylvania's U.S. Senator Pat Toomey says he will retire at the end of his term in 2022. Sam Dunklaw of member station WITF reports the move leaves a competitive Senate seat open in the next election cycle.
For nearly two decades, Toomey has been a reliable vote for Senate Republicans. His retirement sets the stage for a competitive Senate race in 2022, and he hopes his announcement will give Republicans ample time to regroup. In the meantime, Toomey says he'll focus on finishing out his term.
I've got 2 years left, and my intention is to work as hard as I possibly can. I will have the luxury, in a way, of not having a campaign to manage at the same time.
Democrats have been steadily gaining ground in Pennsylvania. Toomey won a tight race in 2010 and was reelected by a narrow margin in 2016 in what was then one of the most expensive Senate races ever. For NPR News, I'm Sam Dunklaw in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
This is NPR.
The number of COVID-19 cases associated with the Kodiak Island borough has climbed to 90. The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization says there have been 7 new reports of COVID exposure. The first 2 cases were reported Friday afternoon and involved residents. The source of the transmission for this outbreak is still being investigated. On Saturday, 4 cases were identified. The Emergency Services Group says 3 were close contacts of a positive case from last week and all had been in quarantine prior to testing positive. The fourth case on Saturday was community spread. Another case was reported this morning, and that person is a close contact of a previous case. All seven of the new cases are in isolation, with efforts underway to trace all close contacts. 16 cases are considered active locally. The coronavirus outbreak at the Coast Guard station in Kodiak grew to 13 cases over the weekend, amid reports that the Coast Guard has raised its risk status from amber to red. Four COVID-19 cases had been reported by midweek. The Coast Guard said those service members were all close contacts who had traveled off-island recently. On Thursday, the Coast Guard disclosed that there were two more cases involving children who are dependents of service members who had been exposed to the virus. On Friday, the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization reported two more close contact cases tied to the Coast Guard station, which brought the total number of COVID exposures on base to 8. Over the weekend, that number grew by 5. Kodiak City Manager Mike Tvingi, who also serves as director of the Emergency Services Group, said representatives from an Emergency Services Council, which includes the Coast Guard, met over the weekend.
The Coast Guard has been very transparent about this the whole time, and if they weren't, we wouldn't hear about any of this. But we've had briefings over the weekend, and we're going to continue monitoring the situation.
Tvingi says he wants to reassure the community that the Coast Guard outbreak is not out of control.
Overall, these cases are monitored and contained. The spread is what we know of, which is a good thing. If we didn't know where the cases were coming from, that would be more frightening.
Tvingi urged the community to continue to wear their masks and practice social distancing because the Coast Guard outbreak is part of an overall trend.
We should be careful about this. The state of Alaska is on the uptick with more cases reported the last couple of weeks than previously, so we all need to be vigilant about taking care of each other.
Tvingi said the Emergency Council discussed the Coast Guard station's shift from amber to red status. The Coast Guard has not confirmed this change in status, but has sent notifications to its service members outlining the new restrictions in what it calls limited movement status, which began on Saturday for a period of 14 days. This is the biggest crisis we've faced together, Hernance wrote in an internal Coast Guard message. He also told members that the Coast Guard has been engaged in aggressive contact tracing and has cast a wide net, so they should expect more COVID cases to surface over the next 2 weeks. The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization is expected to update its COVID-19 count on Monday, that's today, to reflect the new cases. On Friday, there were 83 reports of coronavirus exposure associated with the Kodiak area, with 10 cases considered active locally. And as I just reported, we now have 16 active cases locally and 90 cases total. Alaska's COVID-19 situation is worsening as well. The state announced 142 new resident cases on Sunday, one of the highest daily new case totals since the pandemic began. According to the Department of Health and Social Services, the state's 14-day average new case rate has reached a new peak of 14.93 per 100,000 people. In a video update, State Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink said, Alaska is just above the national median in terms of cases per 100,000 people, and in an effort to slow the disease spread, she urged Alaskans to get tested at the start of any symptoms.
That is when this testing really makes the biggest difference. So even if you think that the allergies are getting a little worse, you're not feeling really well, and you're just wondering if something's coming down, get tested early, get tested often. It just makes a gigantic difference to make sure that you know if you have got the disease and if you can prevent the spread to others.
Zink says the range of symptoms and their severity can vary widely.
Fever, cough, fatigue, loss of appetite, shortness of breath, sputum projection like runny nose or just really achy. People can also have diarrhea and rashes associated with COVID. And so it's really important if people aren't feeling well to not go to school or not to go to work.
The DHSS also continues to encourage masking, distancing, and keeping social bubbles small and avoiding the three C's.
Congregate places, close contacts, and confined settings.
Dr. Zink also asks that Alaskans get their seasonal flu shot to keep hospitals from potentially being overwhelmed. As of Saturday night, 34 people were hospitalized with COVID-19 in Alaska, with another 17 under investigation for the infection. 6 COVID patients were on ventilators. The state's COVID-19 death toll is now 58. The latest victim was a Juneau woman in her 60s whose death was reported on Friday. After winning the Congressional Gold Award Medal in 2020, Rafael Batanga says he's just getting started.
Going forward, I hope to be able to create a business in which I can come back to Kodiak and provide opportunities for the people working in the canneries, because both my parents were cannery laborers.
The Kodiak native is now a freshman at Cornell University studying hospitality administration. While he was unable to receive the award from the Speaker of the House in person, as is tradition, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, he says that doesn't take away from the achievement.
Really, the Congressional Award allowed me to figure out how can I continue to take initiative and make a difference in my community.
After reaching and blowing past the 400 community service hour requirement, Rafael says it's closer to 1,000 hours now, and completing the 200 hours of personal development by learning cello and piano, Rafael then had to demonstrate physical fitness by participating in his high school's track and field team. And of course, we can't forget to mention the 5 days of travel required for the award, which Rafael traveled with a friend to New York City. After all of that, could he take home the grand prize, the Congressional Gold Award Medal, the only one of its kind on Kodiak Island, with 6 others in the entire state of Alaska? Rafael also wants to be a resource to young people in Kodiak who dream big. Rafael's parting message:
to all of the students who may be listening or will be listening to this in the future, I just want them to know that my name is searchable online. You can access my phone number, my email, my Facebook, my Instagram. Please use me as a resource. I am here to be of support to all of you.
As a first-generation college student, Rafael had a lot to overcome, and he wants to help others do the same. He is going out of his way at his new school to do professional headshots for first-generation college students. The Kodiak Island Borough's efforts to get mail-in ballots to outlying communities in time for next Tuesday's municipal election has run into some problems. Port Lyons Mayor Dorinda Kuhn says some voters haven't received their ballots yet.
I'm concerned about the process they set up, and I know it's new. This has never been done that I can remember by the Kodiak Island Borough. And I'm just a little concerned the process might have been rushed or isn't exactly solid enough to make sure everybody gets a chance to vote.
Kuhn says other off-road communities on Kodiak Island report the same problem. She says if ballots don't arrive in time for a Tuesday postmark, they can't be counted. Normally, there are polling sites in each Kodiak Island community, but to prevent the spread of COVID-19, the Borough Assembly passed a resolution earlier this year to allow ballot by mail precincts. The Assembly set the deadline for mailing the ballots at 15 days before the election. The borough clerk, Elise Rice, says it's her office's practice to get election materials mailed way ahead of the deadline, and in Alaska, there's good reason to do that. Even though the clerk's office met the mail-out deadline, there were a number of unforeseeable circumstances which caused delays. First, there was a problem with the election pamphlets, which are supposed to accompany the ballots. The clerk says even though her office approved the proofs for the pamphlet, the Anchorage company that produced them had a printer malfunction that garbled the information, so they had to be reprinted. And then there was another big problem.
We had some record winds occurring here, and I know that some of the mail has not made it out to the villages, which it's very disappointing that they're not getting there in the way that we intended.
And yet another problem remains: what to do about ballots that aren't received in time to vote. The clerk says the borough attorney is reviewing possible options, but as of yet, there's no fix to the problem.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The Alaska Mental Health Trust is proposing a timber sale up to 4,300 acres in the Shelter Cove area, roughly 14 miles northeast of Ketchikan. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, it's actually on land the Mental Health Trust doesn't own yet.
The sale would take place on land that the trust plans to acquire from the U.S. Forest Service as part of a 2017 deal. That land swap was the largest in the trust's history when Menifee directs the Mental Health Trust's land office.
The idea is that it's an equal value land exchange. The equal value land exchange will be determined by an appraisal of all the properties. The final appraisal is being done now. So when that appraisal is complete, then we will determine how much land we'll actually get as the final part of the exchange.
Menifee says that by starting the process prior to actually receiving the land, the trust can ensure that logging can begin as soon as the swap is finalized. He says one of the trust's functions is to make money to finance mental health programs, and he predicts it'll bring timber to market for Southeast Alaska's logging industry.
Our goal is to help the trust, but we need business partners in that to make that happen. So that's why we're very interested in making sure there's enough timber on the market in the near term so that they can stay in business and buy more timber from us.
But not everyone's on board.
SEAC believes that the Mental Health Trust should wait until the land swap is finalized before taking the steps to initiate this timber sale.
That's Dan Cannon. He manages the Tongass Forest Program for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, or SEAC.
And of course, SEAC stands against any industrial-scale clear-cut logging of old growth. And this sale targets a significant amount of old growth, and SEAC will be doing anything we can to advocate for the protections of those of that old growth habitat.
Cannon says he hopes the Mental Health Trust will consider other ways to make money off its new acquisition. He suggests restoration or recreation projects. And he says industry figures have already pointed to the nearby South Revilla timber sale offered by the Forest Service as uneconomical. And speaking of that nearby South Revilla project, Cannon also says offering timber sales so close to one another, or even overlapping, makes it difficult for residents to keep up with projects that may hurt the lands they rely on for hunting and foraging.
I would hope moving forward, these agencies would be coordinating to ensure a more transparent and fair public process that really lays out these potential impacts across landowners.
Menifee says he can't speak to the Forest Service's plans for South Revilla, but he says the trust plans to run the timber sale in line with state and federal law.
We want to be a good neighbor. We have an interest in maintaining these lands in perpetuity, so therefore we won't treat them bad. We want to make sure that they're we have good stewardship as we're doing that timber sale, so we will have an environmentally responsible timber sale down there.
Adjustments to the land swap deal are still pending, but Menifee says he expects it to be completed early next year. The trust is currently seeking public comments on what's called a best interest decision. That's essentially a determination that selling timber would be good for the trust and its beneficiaries. Menifee says if that's upheld, the Mental Health Trust will seek proposals from logging companies to log up to 4,300 acres of old-growth forest near Shelter Cove. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
The Anchorage Assembly approved a resolution last week that aims to improve transparency within the Anchorage Police Department. It focuses on making policy changes more available to the public. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George has this report.
Tuesday's resolution passed with an amendment supported by both the Berkowitz administration and APD, requiring quarterly reports to the Assembly of any changes to police policy. It also involves the existing Public Safety Advisory Commission in reviewing policy changes to determine if public input is needed. There were initial calls to postpone the resolution indefinitely from Assembly members who felt the move was unnecessary or needed more work. Assemblywoman Jamie Allard.
If we truly had a problem with our APD, I can understand this coming forward. We do not have problems within the APD that reflect what's going on in the lower 48.
This summer, following the deaths of George Floyd and other Black Americans, demonstrations around the country have protested police brutality and called for, at minimum, reforms to policing. Anchorage held its own peaceful protests in which protesters spoke about problematic run-ins with police and called for reforms within the department. Assemblyman Forrest Dunbar said APD leadership has been reasonably amenable to discussing transparency measures, including publishing APD policies online. He said regular policy reports will help keep the public in the loop.
Policies change, and sometimes folks aren't always monitoring that website, which is quite detailed. And so it would be better to have some affirmative statement they could come and just at least inform us.
The resolution proposed by Assemblywoman Meg Zolotell comes a month after a previous failed ordinance that would have required APD to submit policy changes to the Assembly for approval. Zolotell said it was a small step towards transparency and accountability.
If not now, when? I mean, come on. I have to say, frankly, this is a baby step. We can put this off forever, it feels like, but the conversation of 2020 is transparency in policing and accountability, and I want to have this conversation with the community.
Allard ultimately voted for the amended resolution. It passed 10-1 with only Assemblyman Cameron Perez-Verdia voting against. Perez-Verdia said later he feels okay with the resolution as it is, but was hoping it would be postponed for a period of time to allow more work and input from stakeholders. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
And by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, proud to offer a variety of sofas and love seats made in Oregon by Stanton, as well as massage and zero-gravity chairs by Human Touch. Find the fabric and style that fits your lifestyle in the store or by special order. Also featuring inviting rugs, lamps, and accessories for your home at Ardinger's, 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Russia adds to Alaska's seafood market woes. More after this.
Over 30% of fishermen deaths in Alaska are from falling overboard. Life jackets save lives, and today's models fit right into your work gear. Learn more at amsea.org.
U.S. fishermen and seafood companies are getting clobbered by COVID-19 hits to markets, but that hasn't stopped the federal government from spending billions of dollars on millions of pounds of seafood from Russia. The purchases have continued to grow since the virus hit our shores, although Russia has not bought 1 ounce of U.S. seafood for 6 years. In 2014, Russia placed an embargo on U.S. food products. Before that, Russia accounted for over $61 million in Alaska sales, including more than 76% of the value for pink salmon roe. Alaska and Russia catch many of the same types of fish and crabs, and Russian products compete directly in the U.S. at much lower prices. But no corresponding limits were placed on Russia selling its seafood into the U.S. In fact, the value of Russian seafood to the U.S. has grown 70% since 2014 and has tripled to nearly $670 million since 2016. And it all comes into the U.S. almost entirely duty-free. For all of 2019, for example, the U.S. has bought over 80 million pounds of seafood from Russia, totaling nearly $700 million. That includes 6.5 million pounds of frozen Russian-caught sockeye salmon, valued at nearly $17 million. Andy Wink, director of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, calls it unfair.
We have a really good domestic market for Alaska sockeye, yet anytime our prices get high, here comes this Russian sockeye, and there's no channel for it to go back to Russia. It's been closed, and yet we're leaving our gates open for Russian product coming in, and it just seems very unfair as far as trade practices go.
Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Welcome to your Island Messenger. For Monday, it is the fifth day of October, the year 2020. Sun rose today at 8:24. It won't set again until 7:31 this evening, giving us 11 hours and 6 minutes of glorious daylight. That is a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local district tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 4:22 p.m. That will be an 8.8-foot tide, followed by a low tide tonight at 10:51 p.m. of 0.4 feet. Your high tide for early tomorrow morning will be at 5:10 a.m., 7-foot tide, and your low tide for later tomorrow morning on the east side will be at 10:43 a.m., a 2.5-foot tide. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a high tide coming up at 4:51 this afternoon. That will be a 15-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 11:23 tonight, a 0.3-foot tide. Your high tide for early tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 5:34 a.m., rather, a 13.5-foot tide. And your low tide for nearly noon tomorrow on the west side, 11:30 tomorrow morning, will be 3.3 feet. 53 degrees outside here in Kodiak. Looks like partly sunny skies are going to go to partly cloudy skies tonight. Mostly sunny tomorrow with a high near 53 as well. And partly cloudy skies tomorrow night. Rain likely on Wednesday, mainly before 4 a.m. Just a chance of rain for the rest of the week, all the way through Sunday. Pretty mild temperatures and weather. We are expecting gusty winds tonight from the west. Speaking of winds, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 986 millibar low, 130 nautical miles east of Middleton Island, will move inland on Monday afternoon. A weak low pressure will then persist south of Prince William Sound through early Wednesday. The resulting weather, small craft advisory, Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore, southwest winds of 30 knots right now and seas to 11 feet. For tomorrow, look for west 20, seas to 7 feet. Over on the west side in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight. West winds at 25 knots right now and seas to 7 feet in the Shelikof. For tomorrow, look for west winds at 20 knots and seas to 4 feet. For our inside waters on the east side, Chiniak Bay, look for west winds at 15 knots with gusts to 25 knots today, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, look for west winds at 15 knots becoming northwest 10, seas to 2 feet. In Marmot Bay, west winds at 25 knots, seas to 5 feet right now. For tomorrow, look for west winds to 15 knots and seas to 3 feet. Kodiak City Council will hold a work session on Thursday. The meeting will begin at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. It's open to the public, and you will be asked to wear a mask and socially distance. For more information, call the City Clerk at 486-8636. The City Council will also be holding a regular council meeting on the same evening, Thursday. That meeting is scheduled to begin at 7:30 p.m., also in the Borough Assembly Chambers. You also will be asked to wear a mask and socially distance. The Kodiak Chamber of Commerce is pleased to announce the confirmation of the Alaska U.S. senatorial candidate debate between Senator Dan Sullivan and Dr. Al Gross. This fisheries-themed debate will occur on October 10th at 5 p.m. The debate will take place over Zoom and be live-streamed at the Kodiak Chamber and ComfishAK.com websites, and also on the Kodiak Chamber and Comfish Facebook and YouTube channels. It will also be broadcast here on KMXT and through statewide public radio broadcasting networks. The moderator will be our own Rhonda McBride. If you'd like to contribute topics or questions, you can send an email to chamber@kodiak.org. On Wednesday, October 7th, that's 2 days from today, at 6 p.m., the library's community book club, Kodiak Reads, will meet the author of To the Bright Edge of the World at its Zoom meeting. The link to join them at the library is on the library's website and Facebook page and can be emailed to you. But again, author at the library, Wednesday, October 7th, joined by Zoom by going to the Facebook page or the library website.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Fax us at 416-476-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.